world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 6th of January, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, today we're going to take a look at the beginning of the trial, the arraignment of Maduro. It's going to be Trump on trial as well, quite frankly. And it's interesting to see some of the comments that people like Jonathan Turley are making. I have some big issues with some of these comments and the perspective that they're looking at with this. It's also comical, some of the things that he is charged with. And so then the question becomes, who's next? Nobody is asking, are we ever going to follow the law anymore? No, now the question is, so which one of these four or five countries are we going to go to war with next? And on whose behalf? Will we do it for the oil companies? Will we do it for Israel? When are we going to do something for the American people? You know, there's talk now amongst MAGA that Trump is going to bring back the usury laws and cap interest rates at 10%. That's a great headline. Unfortunately, there's a big difference between candidate Trump and President Trump. We'll be right back. Well, it was very telling as Maduro was arraigned. You see the conservative press, just as the Trump administration has been doing, pushing on the fact, oh, he's not president at all. Because as I pointed out yesterday, for a head of state, extradition is different, and you are not allowed, basically what they did is war. It's not a police action. There has never been an understanding that you just go seize somebody, especially a head of state, like that. Duterte, right, of the Philippines, who decided, like Trump, and Trump really liked this guy. He thought he had it right. He was just going to do extrajudicial executions on the street of the Philippines. If the police thought you were dealing drugs, they could just shoot you dead right there. And they didn't, nobody came after him while he's in office. They arrested him after he left office, and he's standing trial now. But again, this is a show. It is a theatrical show. I showed you yesterday not only the pictures that they took of Maduro, put him in baggy pants and handcuffs, and put blindfolds over his eyes, and took pictures of him, and Trump put it out on social media, but they also paraded him through the streets of New York. And I said at the time, that's an interesting jurisdiction for the Trump administration to choose. They just went with the default of where charges had been filed previously. But Trump doesn't have a very good record in New York in terms of trials. And now he's going to be standing before a 92-year-old judge, which the lawyers have said, basically, this guy doesn't give a crap about anything. He's going to do his own thing. And he's ruled against Trump several times already. He is a Clinton-appointed judge. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this. Unfortunately, there's not going to be any further developments for quite some time. It'll probably be this summer before the trial actually begins. What I thought was interesting was Jonathan Turley's comments. And I'm afraid that Jonathan Turley is losing his credibility, at least with me, because of the cheerleading that he's doing for Trump. And because of what I said yesterday about whataboutism. Hey, we got precedents for this. You don't have law, right? Precedents should not be making law like this everywhere. This is the disease of judicial supremacy. Well, the Supreme Court decided this, and so we're going to do it. We don't really care what the 10th Amendment says. We don't care what anything else says. I mean, if the court wants to redefine what marriage is, well, they can do that and set a precedent. And now it's the law of the land because it's something that the Supreme Court did. Well, now we're seeing this with everything. Well, if it's something that the president did, now it's a law of the land. No, that's not how we do it. There was absolutely, for example, with homosexual marriage, there's no authority for the federal government to have any decision about that. They overthrew the will of the people and the constitutions of the state. Everywhere that had been put on the ballot it had been defeated, even in California. Yet the Supreme Court comes in and says, no, we're going to define it for you. Where did you get that authority? And why does that become a precedent? And so this is what Jonathan Turley had to say. He was laughing about the fact that Maduro claims that he's president while in a prison jumpsuit. Seriously? If you want to, let's make a decision about this. Is it going to be a war? Is it going to be a drug raid? What is this really about? Because if it's a war, which is what they were saying earlier, this guy's a prisoner of war. If you get captured, for example, if you're captured and your rank is colonel, you're a prisoner of war, but your rank is still colonel, even though you might be in a prison jumpsuit. Whoops. Let's see. What is it? Okay. This is what he had to say here. He said, Trump does not need congressional approval for this type of operation. Presidents, including Democrat presidents, have launched lethal attacks regularly against individuals. President Barack Obama killed an American citizen under his kill list policy. That was wrong. I spoke against that. That was wrong. I don't care if the guy was a terrorist. I do care if he's a terrorist. He needs to have due process. Because if we're going to kill people simply because, well, I think he's a terrorist, I mean, that's essentially what Duterte did. And it's what Obama did. He killed this guy, then he assassinated his son later on, who was like a teenager. We need to have due process, because if we don't, the government becomes a terrorist drug cartel. A lot of people are joking, calling the Trump administration Marco terrorists after Marco Rubio. I think that's the best description of them I have seen. Here's a clip of Turley talking about Maduro.
Law professor and Fox News contributor Jonathan Turley is here. Jonathan, welcome to you. First off, it's
Thank
been
you,
a big
Senator.
Day. What struck you most so far?
Well, his statement in court was remarkable, that he's still the president of his country. You would think that the prison jumpsuit would disabuse him of that concept.
Doesn't
but,
change anything.
Certainly over 50 countries around the world would not accept that. And I don't think the court will either. This is Noriega 2.0. I mean, he is going to be arguing
that, was wrong
that he
as
is
well.
Still the head of state entitled to immunity. Just that very few people believe that's true. And he's in a worse position than Noriega. So I expect that they're going to stick the landing on this. This is going to go to trial, and he stands an excellent chance of being convicted. I mean, the only scarier thing than that operation for Maduro should be the superseding indictment. I mean, they have a lot on him, more than most of us imagined.
And that goes back to when the CIA got on the ground there. We are told dating back to August 2025, when the CIA unit deployed to Venezuela to start monitoring Maduro and his wife's movements. When you look at the charges here, narco-terrorism,
let's look at the charges. Listen to this.
Cocaine importation, conspiracy, possession of machine guns and destructive devices, conspiracy to possess machine guns, the wife's charges, cocaine, possession of machine guns. It's no wonder AG Barr was on Newsroom earlier defending
He's the president
the
of a country
of Maduro based on what we know about him and his wife. Listen.
Well, yeah. And so then they get Bill Barr, who is both an attorney general, but also George H.W. Bush's right-hand man, to rebuild the CIA after the fiasco that they had with the Church and Pike hearings that were there. Bill Barr, the guy who either executed or escaped Jeffrey Epstein, the guy who, as soon as he got in, he wanted to kill Julian Assange. We should go to Bill Barr and get him to define for us what the law is. Give me a break. More of the deep state. And, of course, it was obvious even in Trump's first administration that he was going to the deep state well in order to get his personnel. I mean, look at John Bolton, for example. I even saw a meme. We've Been Fooled, and it had John Bolton's meme on Donald Trump, John Bolton's mustache, I should say, on Donald Trump as a meme. And that's basically what it is. He's not going after He's not going after him because he doesn't like his politics. He was just fine with a deep state eternal war. But he doesn't like the fact that Bolton criticized him. And so, machine guns? I mean, is this the ATF that is going after him or the DEA? The bottom line is, in terms of cocaine and machine guns and things like that, he's head of state. If he wants to have machine guns, he can have machine guns. If he wants to legalize cocaine in his state, he can legalize cocaine. So the possession of that. Now, if he's trafficking it into the United States, that's a different situation. But, of course, Trump just pardoned the Honduran president for doing the same thing. Why is he going after this guy? It's not about the drugs, folks. Everybody knows it's not about the drugs. When is he going to claim that fentanyl is coming from Greenland? I'm waiting for that to happen. We can all see with Greenland, finally. There's absolutely nothing going on with Greenland. It is simply about ego and greed. You can see that with Greenland and then work back to the rest of these things. You understand what Trump's motivations are. I don't understand how in the world they can come after him for machine guns, though. Because machine guns are illegal in the United States, and they're not illegal. They came after the Branch Davidians because they didn't pay the tax. You can have machine guns, you can have suppressors, but you better file all the paperwork and send them all the money because they're set up that way to be a process trap, a process crime that they can come after you for. So he says his statements in court were remarkable, that he's still the president of his country. Well, yeah, and it's not for the United States to invalidate another country's elections if you got an issue with it. They had an issue with it, and I've talked for the longest time about how if you go back to the beginning of Smartmatic, that electronic voting machine company was started by three friends of Hugo Chavez, first used in Venezuela. And, of course, he never lost an election after that. And so I've talked about Smartmatic's origins in Venezuela and crooked elections and how there have been accusations that Smartmatic voting machines have been used to rig elections for socialists and communists in provinces of Mexico and Brazil and the Philippines. And they've had major, major scandals in those countries, hearings and other things looking at it. But, of course, we're not allowed to talk about that in the United States. You have to pretend that the elections are clean and safe and effective. Let me tell you, our elections are about as safe and effective as Trump's bioweapon. But the reality is that, yes, of course, he's rigging the elections. Tell me one country that doesn't have rigged elections. Please, I'm waiting. Convince me. So to say that he's not president when he is, even to the extent that Trump says, well, now I've taken him out of there, now I'm going to run the country. So Trump is saying he was running the country. Maduro was running the country. But at the same time, they want to say that he's not president, because that would set a dangerous precedent for a lot of different countries, and that would turn international law against them. It is a violation of international law to go after a head of state, to violate their sovereignty, which is what they have done. If you want to talk about people who have committed crimes and corrupt administrations, Trump, you might want to start with your pal, Bibi Netanyahu. What if people were to kidnap him from Israel? Assuming that they could. Of course, they couldn't. But assuming that the principle is the issue. And they're going to just move on from that. And then, you know, you've got the whataboutism of Jonathan Turley saying, well, we have these precedents. Look, we did that to Noriega. Noriega? I don't know. The guy's got to go. He's a strong man, right? That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. Yes, he was dealing drugs. So was the CIA. The CIA is the biggest drug cartel anywhere. And he was working with them until he stopped working with them. And then when he stopped working with them, they went after him. They don't like competition. They don't like rivals. They want to control the drug trade. I mean, just look at what the CIA and the U.S. military did in Afghanistan with opium and with the poppy fields. You know, they went down, they had them under 10% of the world supply under the Taliban. When we took over, we had U.S. troops guarding the fields. Remember, you had Geraldo Rivera ran the report, showed the troops out there. And they said, oh, we don't want to, this is the way the people make a living. And we don't want to stop that. It would be too disruptive to stop the opium trade. So it went from under 10% with the Taliban to over 90% of the world supply under the U.S. government's protection. And it was a record bumper crop every year. Don't talk to me about drugs and criminal regimes about that. What absurdity, what hypocrisy for the U.S. government to talk about people that are drug cartels, government being involved in pushing drugs. Look at the mirror. See from what you're doing here. And again, the concern that I have with this is the whataboutism. Trump doesn't need congressional approval for this type of operation. Presidents, including Democratic presidents, have launched lethal attacks. That's against the law. That's against the Constitution. Jonathan Turley, you're a lawyer. You ought to care about that kind of thing. What is sad is that these people got away with it. And because they got away with it, this is the argument always coming from the left, that the Constitution is a living document. If you say the Constitution is a living document, what you're saying is the Constitution doesn't mean anything. We don't have to follow it. Why is it that they take the oath to the Constitution as a condition of their office? Again, it is this double standard. It is this facade. It's the difference between what they say and what they do. This is a very dangerous idea to say that, to pretend that he's not a president, that this is that he's just a strong man, and to say that, well, because other people violated the Constitution, now Trump can do it. And this is the line of defense for everything that Trump is doing as he usurps power, as he declares emergency, as he rules as a dictator. Well, so-and-so did something like that, or so-and-so did exactly that same thing and got away with it. Let's at some point maybe even have a law professor at Georgetown University like Jonathan Turley stand for the rule of law. I'm disgusted with this country. I'm disgusted with both parties. Maduro said, I was captured as he pleads not guilty to drug trafficking charges. And look, that's the key thing. Was he captured or was he arrested? Right? Is he president or is he just some random guy out there? And if he's a random guy out there, why didn't they just kill him like they did the people in the boats? Right? We got over 100 people that they just murdered on sight because they determined from a distance that they must be carrying drugs. None of this makes sense. This is Orwellian combined with Kafka. This country has gone crazy. We have no moral foundation, no legal foundation. Nothing even makes sense from their narratives. They keep contradicting themselves over and over again. Look, I'm not a defender of Maduro. I don't care to know about Maduro. It's a different country. We shouldn't be involved there. Maybe Trump should focus on America, but he doesn't. Defiant Nicolas Maduro declared himself to be, quote, the president of my country. I was captured. Then the judge cut him off. Later he said, I'm innocent. I'm not guilty. I'm a decent man. I'm the constitutional president of my country. Well, you know, we don't care about our own constitution. Why do we care about his? Again, this is like this guy, Garcia, who actually was trafficking people through Tennessee, and they caught him. But when you look at the way the Trump administration first interacted with him and the charges that they brought against him and what they did in terms of denying him due process, that was absolutely wrong. And the Trump administration can even ask people in Tennessee, the highway patrol that arrested him, in Tennessee, and they said, yeah, we got him, and the Biden administration said, let him go. He was traveling in a vehicle that was registered to a guy who had been convicted for trafficking people. He had half dozen people in the truck. I don't remember the exact number. None of them spoke English. None of them were American citizens, and he's driving across the country with it. And so, yeah, it looks like he's involved with us. But the Trump administration didn't make it about that. It wasn't about that. It was about the supposed tattoos on his knuckles. That look, he's even got MS13 on his knuckles. No, that was Photoshopped in. They made it about silly stuff like that. They made it about attacking his character. Oh, well, you know, his wife took out a restraining order against him or something like that. They didn't make it about the actual crime. I think the guy committed a crime. I think they could have made that case. They could have given him due process, and they could have sent him abroad, you know, even to the El Salvador prison. I wouldn't have had a problem with that if they had given him due process. That's the key thing. We can't shut people down in terms of speech because we don't like their speech. If we do that, we've completely destroyed free speech. And we can't skip the due process. We can't skip the trials simply because we believe this guy actually is guilty. Or maybe we even witnessed it with our own eyes. We've got to tell other people that. And we have to have that kind of a check. And the reason we have to have that kind of a check is because it isn't sufficient for people in power to just point a finger at somebody and say, take him, execute him. We've had governments like that throughout history. That's why the founders of this country created a constitution, written law, Jonathan Turley, that you ought to read sometime. Pathetic. The state of this country, from the law professors to the Supreme Court, to the people, the politicians in Washington, and the people at the state level. And the grassroots people who are cheering all of this. They want this. As I said, I've never been more disgusted with this country from the bottom to the top. It's rotten. And it's rotted from the top down. This criminal case is unfolding against a broader diplomatic backdrop of an audacious U.S.-engineered regime change. If he's not president, why would you call it a regime change? That Trump has said will enable his administration to run the country. Again, this all implies that you are changing the president. Maduro was brought to court under heavy security early Monday, flown by helicopter from Manhattan to Manhattan from Brooklyn, where he's jailed, and then driven to the courthouse in an armored vehicle. This is after they paraded him the night before in armored vehicles through the streets of New York and opening up the doors so that everybody could see him tied up. It's a show. It's a theater. It really is. As Maduro left the courtroom, a man in the audience denounced him as an illegitimate president. And this is not for us to determine. It's not for us to determine whether he has the proper permits from the ATF to have a machine gun. He conspired to get machine guns, and he had machine guns. Throw this guy in jail forever. That's amazing. Well, you know, they like Churchill, and Churchill posed with a machine gun. I guess we should lock him up, too, as well, right? Maduro's lawyer, Barry Pollock, said he expects to contest the legality of his military abduction. But that didn't work for Noriega. And in this article from the AP, they even go back to Bush's title for him. Panamanian strongman. Strongman Noriega. So that was kind of a clue that there was a strong scent of BS about this whole thing when they gave him that title. But again, it's important for these criminal American presidents to deny that somebody is head of state, even when they are. It isn't, how did George W. Bush become president, or Trump? Is it because they worked with bankers in other foreign countries and casino owners and all the rest of this stuff to get into the presidency? I mean, the path of the presidency, you don't want to look to see how that sausage is made, do you? The 26-page indictment accuses Maduro and others of working with drug cartels to facilitate the shipment of thousands of tons of cocaine. And who knows, maybe to possess machine guns even. Among other things, the indictment accuses Maduro and his wife of kidnappings, beatings, and murders of those who owed them drug money or undermined their drug trafficking operation. Well, let's not look too closely at the CIA. Okay, pedophilia for blackmail, assassinations, foreign and domestic, and all the other crimes of the CIA. Seriously, do you really want to go there and do a standard of comparison between these two groups? Maduro says he was kidnapped, and his wife shows off head injuries. And so, again, the narco-terrorism label put on by the Daily Mail in the UK, like Marco-terrorism. I think that's the flip side of this that we should understand. The 92-year-old judge, who doesn't give a crap about what people think about him, they say he has a stubborn streak. He's often unorthodox approach to running his courtroom. Alvin Hellerstein, a Clinton appointee based in Manhattan, is overseeing Maduro's arraignment, likely to preside over any possible trial of the ousted president. I see he's a president, according to Politico. Well, he is, actually. He's just old and old school, and he does things his own way, and he doesn't care about what anybody thinks about him. Like most lawyers interviewed for this story, this person was granted anonymity to speak candidly about a judge that they may appear before in the future. In the near future, he's 92. Hellerstein has ruled against Trump on his administration and other high-profile cases, including the charges involving alleged hush money payments made to Stormy Daniels. Hellerstein twice rejected Trump's bids to move a case to federal court. And just 2 months ago, an appeals court overturned one of those two rulings. Hellerstein has also issued a sweeping order last May blocking the Trump administration from deporting immigrants under the Alien Enemies Act with little, if any, due process. The ruling essentially labeled such deportations in the Southern District of New York, where the judge sits. And again, you have all these trials that have happened in New York and in Washington, D.C. Obviously, they don't like Trump, and I think a lot of this lawfare was unfairly determined against Trump. So why would the Trump administration choose to go with this? Is it expediency? Is it stupidity? This is like his, he wanted to get even with Comey and with Letitia James and Pam Bondi, and nobody else at the Department of Justice actually wanted to go through and file those charges that he wanted. Just find something, anything. You know, well, I don't want to do that. So they brought in his personal real estate attorney, who has no experience whatsoever in court or as a prosecutor. And guess what? She screwed things up, and the way that he appointed her was messed up. And so even though she brought these charges, the judges threw them out. So again, the Trump administration doesn't always go through and think these things through. He's basking in the glory of the military that practices for this kind of stuff all the time. And yes, they executed it flawlessly. The question is not whether or not you can do something. The question is whether you should do something. And so that gets us back to the illegal orders, and it is kind of interesting to see that Pete Hegseth has now found a way that he thinks he can punish Mark Kelly. And we'll talk about that in a moment, but I want to finish up with this and this judge. The closest analog for Maduro, of course, is Noriega, they point out in this article from Politico, who was seized by U.S. troops in 1990. Over 20 months passed between Noriega's arrest and the opening of his jury trial. The trial, which lasted seven months, led to him being convicted on 8 drug and racketeering charges. He was initially sentenced to 40 years in prison, although that figure was later cut to 30 and then to 17 years. And so the U.S. court system will get what it wants. It's just that this 92-year-old judge is something of a wild card in this whole process. Usually, the American government wants to get somebody that's high profile, they just rubber stamp it. Remains to be seen if this judge will do that. And so it is, the headlines say Venezuela is on trial, but I think it's also the Trump administration that will be on trial as well. As Rubio is saying, he's not the legitimate president of Venezuela. They have to do that. They have to call him a strongman or a cartel leader or something like that. And So he said he's recognized. He says none of these three administrations, the first Trump administration, the Biden administration, or the second Trump administration, none of them recognize him as legitimate. He's not recognized by the European Union, multiple countries around the world, a fugitive of American justice with a $50 million reward, which I guess we saved $50 million. And that's kind of an interesting thing as well. When you look at the, what is that reward? You had Lindsey Graham saying, yeah, $50 billion on him. It's like, well, that can't be true. So I looked that up. And of course it wasn't, it's $50 million. But you know, Lindsey's been in Washington, D.C. for so long, he can't tell a million from a billion, and he doesn't care to tell one from the other. But that goes back to a program that began in 1989. It's the State Department's rewards program for narcotics snitches. And they have the cap on that is actually $25 billion. And so Trump, in his first administration, put a bounty on Noriega's head of $15 million. And then on the very last couple of weeks of office in January of 2025, Biden, before he left, brought it up to the full max of $25. And then last August, Trump, since he doesn't care what any rules or laws say, went past the max for the bill. Again, the max was $25 million. He went up to $50 million. And, you know, because he does whatever he wishes. It doesn't matter. And so that is a program that it pays for actionable intelligence. And there's been a lot of talk about how they believe that there was at least one or more people in the Noriega administration. Many people are pointing to the vice president that's there as being the one who was working with the CIA, letting them know exactly where this guy was going to be all the time. The question is she going to get $50 million or something like it? This money is always paid secretly and discreetly. Everything about the war on drugs, like most of the things that the CIA does, are hidden from the American public. We don't know if they're paying snitches. What they tell us is that this program, which was created in 1989, has to date paid cumulatively all of the snitch money that they paid out goes up to $35 million. And we don't know who they paid it to, for whom they paid it to. Everything is part of the black budget. We're not allowed to know anything about this. And what that does, of course, is that invites criminal illegal actions, as I said. Prohibition, secrecy, national security. It invites corruption of the government, of the courts, of the law enforcement, of the military, of the intelligence agencies. It's one of the reasons why we are so corrupt. And so it's amazing to see this. When we talk about corruption, and we talk about what really needs to happen in this country, the problem with this country is the ethical and moral foundation of this country. And of all people, you would think Al Mohr, who is the president of the biggest one. Oh, I don't know if it's the biggest, but it's perhaps the most prominent of the Southern Baptist seminaries. Al Mohr wrote an op-ed piece, The Parable of Nicolas Maduro. You can run, but you can't hide. And in this article, this guy who is head of the Southern Baptist Seminary, very, very well-known individual, is basically cheering lawlessness. He's cheering war as a conquest and as the aggressor. And this is, I think, indicative of where we are. This is alarming in the same way that many seminaries, it's alarming when they decide that they're going to abandon the Bible as being God's word or authoritative. And what he's doing is he's abandoning the rule of law and the Constitution as being authoritative, and he's embracing authoritarianism. And these principles that Christians have always understood about a just war, basically to distill it down, wars should only be fought in self-defense, so you don't invade another country. And when you're fighting in self-defense, your objective is not then to destroy totally the other side. You want to get it under control, and you want to cease hostilities as soon as possible to save as many lives as possible. And because of that, Western countries would wear military uniforms so we could distinguish combatants from non-combatants. All of this stuff is swept aside. Does Al Mohler have a problem with shipwrecked people who were not combatants in the first place and not in a declared war in the first place, and they were not doing anything that involved America in the first place? Does he have a problem then with the U.S. military circling back and executing them in the water? He doesn't talk about that. No, he beats his chest about how wonderful Trump is, that he can do something like this, that he can get elite soldiers to follow his criminal orders like some kind of a drug lord. And it is, the Army's famed Delta Force, backed up with support and covert actions, snitched the duo, got them to the U.S. vessel, eventually sent them on their way to New York, where they will face what the U.S. Attorney General called the full wrath of American justice. This is Al Mohler writing. What is the matter with this country? Everything. Everything. Due process, rule of law, the ideas of a just war, the idea of not going out and engaging in mass slaughter. When you look at the weapons that we have today, wouldn't you think it'd be more important for somebody like Al Mohler to start to go back to the moral foundations to try to limit the destruction that can be done with the kind of firepower that we have? No, he's not concerned about that. He's feathering his nest politically. He's got a podcast. He wants the MAGA people to listen to him, so he's not going to criticize Trump. He talks about Maduro, former bus driver who would go on to steal multiple elections, who would declare the equivalent of martial law. Wait a minute. Trump did that. Trump did that in 2020. Al Mohler was with him, supporting him, when Trump declared martial law, the equivalent. And Mohler, I remember when Al Mohler went right down the talking points from the Yale psychological people about the bioweapon vaccine. Here's how you tell people to take it, right? They actually, and I talked about it at the time, I think it came out in July of 2020. And I said, look at this. They've actually gone through and done double-blind testing. In other words, they had two groups. One of them, they would give the narrative. The other one, they would not give the narrative. And they would test, and they had about 9 different lies that they would tell you to get you to take the vaccine. And, things like, you need to do this because you love other people. And you need to do this because it's a miracle of science. This is like the moonshot. Al Mohler repeated those arguments verbatim to tell pastors and religious leaders to these wolves to send their sheep to the slaughter. Disgusted me. But I said at the time, look at this. They focus, not just focus groups, but they actually did control group. One that had the narrative, one didn't have the narrative. They actually did that kind of testing, but on the psychology of it. They didn't do that kind of testing on the actual bioweapon to see if it was safe or effective. And he pushed that before. And so the equivalent of martial law, he went on to rule by decree. Why don't you take a look at your hero, Al? Look at Trump. Talking about, is this why somebody should be locked up? Well, actually, I would support locking up Trump and Biden, for that matter. Trump has long condemned interventionists, he said. But then he goes on to say, but this is different and this is fine. He doesn't have to follow his word, and there aren't any principles that we need to be concerned about, says the head of the Southern Baptist Seminary. Even some who like the fact that Maduro is out will decry the U.S. for acting unilaterally. Some will cite international law. But as a Christian leader, he doesn't care about the law. He doesn't care about the moral principles that created the law. He said, realists know that actions like this military strike and the removal of Nicolas Maduro are never fully satisfying, even as they are necessary. This reminds me of, again, Scott Adams, and I'm sorry to see that he is so sick and so close to death. I don't wish him ill. And I'll talk about what he had to say. He's got a lot of people who are contacting him, trying to tell him about Christ. He goes, "Oh, I respect what you have to say," you know, but he really doesn't understand it. And he didn't understand what was going on in 2020 either. He said, "These freedom lovers are looking like sociopaths." And I said at the time, "You pragmatists are looking like totalitarians." This is pragmatism again here. I despise this kind of pragmatism that rejects all law and moral principles. And we've got law professors like Jonathan Turley. We've got seminary leaders like Al Mohr pushing that kind of stuff. This is the war that we should be involved in, not in some foreign country. We are being destroyed in a spiritual and moral war right here at home. That's why I say this is the way empires die. They look like a gigantic tree that's very impressive. But inside, it's rotten, it's hollowed out. And all it takes is a gust of wind to knock over this great tree that is completely rotted on the inside. And that's where we are. As he's talking about the reality and how we have to, the pragmatism and all the rest of this, here's the reality of this, Al Mohr. You had 80 people killed in this raid in Venezuela, including a lot of civilians. You had an apartment building that was hit with missiles, killed a lot of civilians. But you don't care about that. These people are so happy that they didn't even lose any equipment and not a single soldier. The lives of people in other countries don't matter to them at all. I think that's despicable. So, as the anti-war says, while drugs were used as the pretext for the attack, Trump has said that the U.S. now plans to run Venezuela until a government acceptable to the U.S. is installed to ensure the American companies get access to Venezuela's oil. Trump has also claimed that the U.S. was speaking with Rodriguez, the vice president, and she was willing to work with the U.S., though she strongly condemned the U.S. invasion and has called Maduro to be released, called for him to be released. Rodriguez also said Venezuela will never be a colony of any empire. Whenever we look at these things, you have to understand that these public pronouncements of people are theater. And Russian analysts have looked at this and they said, you know, what Trump is doing is a lot of theater for the rest of the world. He is doing this to show what a tough guy he is, and don't mess with him. Don't mess with this mafia boss. Well, before we take a break, I got some comments and even some tips here. Thank you. Brandon Bennett, thank you very much. He says, "Happy Epiphany. May God bless you with peace and light today." Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Dustin Helm, "The devil went down to Zuela. He was looking for some oil to steal." Yeah, that's right. Charlie Daniels, if anything, right? Self-Patriot, thank you very much for the tip. He says, "Watching people justify the same criminality that they once claimed to oppose because it's now coming from their side is mentally exhausting." And that's what this whataboutism stuff is all about, right? They don't care that candidate Trump says one thing and President Trump does another. They don't care when Trump lies to them about so many different things and does everything they hate. They don't care that he's the father of the vaccine when they know it's a bioweapon and criminal. They excuse all of this stuff. That's why I say I'm instead of MAGA making America great again, it's making America doublethink. And they have gone crazy. They have gone mad. But I think the most dangerous aspect of this is the idea that because a former president of either party or both parties, right? Well, you had Democrats and Republican presidents who did this. Yeah, and it was against the law at the time. Still is. And it was immoral and illegal. But okay, they did it. They got away with it. So now Trump can do it. And this is actually the argument that's being made by one commentator after the other. Nearly Human says, "Mr. Knight, Venezuela owes China $60 billion. At some point, they will call in their debt. That debt will be paid by handing over ownership of Venezuelan oil fields. And that will not end well for the West." Well, again, it's going to be by force that that's going to happen. I think the most immediate issue with China is that this gives them the ability to come after Taiwan without the American government being able to say anything about it. And what is Trump going to say to the American people if he wants to drag us into a war with China over a Taiwanese invasion? Aren't there going to be a lot of people who can say, yeah, but what about Venezuela? That's where the whataboutism is going to come back to haunt them. I hope we don't get drawn into some kind of a war like that. But I think it makes it more likely. China, that has been President Xi's key issue, to take back Taiwan. And when you look at Taiwan relationship to China, it's very much like Ukraine's relationship to Russia, although I think Russia has a stronger claim to Ukraine. I mean, it was Russian territory for 400 years, and it was split off after the Soviet Union fell, split off by political coups and things like that, whereas Taiwan was a part of China, and as the nationalist forces were being kicked out by the Chinese, they basically used that as a last redoubt and a fallback position. But that had been a part of China for a very long time. And Xi is definitely set on... Venezuela was never a part of America. And all this Monroe Doctrine about how, well, we're going to treat all of Latin America as if it is part of America, I think that is stupid. It's dangerous. It's never worked. We've had a long history of failed interventions that are there and criminal interventions that are there. Wally Walrus says, basically what we're doing is using sanctions as a mechanism of regime change. We start dangling the idea of lifting sanctions and the CIA starts going in and paying off oligarchs and political elite. Yeah, we need to understand the CIA is at the center of all of these things. They keep coming back. I mean, Trump even said, yeah, we got CIA down there looking at stuff now. And we got CIA that was scoping this out. We got CIA that was telling us where the guy is. We got CIA that was doing a land strike somewhere. Didn't know where it was to this day. Nobody knows. Trump announced that there'd been a strike. Was this done by the CIA or by the military? They asked him. Well, it doesn't matter, he says. It really doesn't, right? Because it's all the deep state. Trump is serving the deep state. And you got Trump sucker media that is out there cheering the deep state. It is maddening. It is doublethink. S.A. Miller, 123, if Trump isn't impeached and removed, he will implement war on American soil, declaring an emergency as to not have a selection, therefore serving a third term, he says, in my opinion. Well, I think what is going to happen, the end result of these actions against the cartels will be to either goad them into attacking the United States in terms of attacking politicians or law enforcement and then declare martial law, or to say that they did and do a false flag and then declare martial law. I think that's what he's doing. I think that's what he's doing with the massive rollout of ICE agents. He's adding another 12,000 ICE agents that are out there. And look at how the government is exploding under Trump. What is it about conservatives that they don't care about that? I mean, we've had under Biden, remember, it was going to be like 80,000 new IRS agents, and yet Mike Johnson didn't want to do anything to stop any of that or pull any of that back. Now Trump is exploding the number of ICE agents, and we have the Secret Service is going to be exploding as well. Got to have more security. Why? Well, because we're going to war with everybody, right? Got to have circle the wagons around Trump. He was actually, as I pointed out yesterday, he was actually trying to paint Maduro as a criminal because he had a safe house, a safe room in his house. Yeah, he had this steel lined room and a steel door and all the rest of the stuff. We got him before he got in there. Trump has that kind of stuff all the time, and he's going to add 2,000 more Secret Service agents. Yeah, when you're a criminal, you got to have that kind of protection. Guard Goldsmith, Liberty Conspiracy. Good to see you, Guard. Says, I have a feeling that many of the American patriots who set up the articles then saw Hamilton usurping them, replacing them, felt the same as David expresses regarding today's crop disregarding the Constitution. Yeah. Yeah, we had, from the very beginning, we had issues with this stuff. As I said before, you know, even to the extent that they wanted to cap the number of people represented by the congressman. You know, it was a 30,000 cap, then they went to 50,000, start out with 30,000, and they were going to cap it at a max of 50,000. I think we're now up to 750,000 or 800,000. They wound up capping the number of congressmen rather than the number of people that were represented. And that began at the very beginning. You know, they knew that they should have something like that, but they didn't have the willpower to actually follow the Constitution from the very beginning on a lot of different issues, as Gard points out. I'm Marty, Sudetenland, 1939, Venezuela, 2025. History rhymes. Yeah, we need the the Lebensraum, right? The living room, and we've decided that Latin America is our living room. We got to have that. Speaking of, that reminds me, Marty, I wanted to thank you for the matching funds that you did last month. It really made a big difference, and I had these on my desk yesterday, and I forgot to go over them. These are the final checks that we got in December, and I wanted to thank everybody, especially Marty, for getting us to the goal in December. As a matter of fact, Barbara F. said she missed learning about the matching funds, so she matched her own funds and sent in a double contribution. I appreciate that. Thank you also Matthew H. and W. Thomas S. and also John A. Thank you very much for the contribution. And he sent this note, and he said, David and family, please pray for me as I am battling disease. So I just wanted to give that to all of you, and because it does make a big difference. Prayer makes a big difference, and what happened with us this last year, I think, is a good example of that with the strokes. You don't know how bad I was, and it truly was amazing, the healing that we had. I still have some leftover issues, but mostly it's gone, and I credit God for that, and I thank you for your prayers. I don't understand how that works, but I know that God puts this in so we can see him working in our lives, you know, and it really does make a difference, and it does make a difference when a lot of people pray. So please keep him in your prayers. That is John A. You don't need to know what his disease is, and he doesn't say what it is. You don't need to know that, but please pray for him. Well, we're going to take a quick break, folks, and we'll be right back. As a matter of fact, this is not too Christmassy, so I'm going to play it. It's more like a winter festival song, so I'll play this one.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Hello, it's me, Volodymyr Zelensky. I'm so tired of wearing these same t-shirts everywhere for years. You'd think with all the billions I've skimmed off America, I could dress better. And I could, if only David Knight would send me one of his beautiful gray MacGuffin hoodies or a new black t-shirt with the MacGuffin logo in blue. But he told me to get lost. Maybe one of you American suckers can buy me some at thedavidknightshow.com. You should be able to buy me several hundred. Those amazing sand-colored microphone hoodies are so beautiful. I'd wear something other than green military cosplay to my various galas and social events. If you want to save on shipping, just put it in the next package of bombs and missiles coming from the USA.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
I think one of the things that's interesting, I didn't get to this yesterday, it's the insider trading. I mean, just like somebody made a lot of money off of this trade, except that, you know, it wasn't like 9/11 money. This was a little bit less. This person put in $34,000 and they pumped that up in a short period of time to make a 12-fold gain. When I told Lance about that yesterday, he laughed and he said, oh, okay, so this is not somebody at the top. This is some lower-level functionary at the Pentagon or the White House, or perhaps even at the Washington Post and the New York Times, because they were given advance notice that this was going to happen before anybody else knew about it. It was definitely insider trading, however. Suspicions of insider trading on the secret operation are rising after a brand new Polymarket account scored a huge profit by betting on U.S. military attack just before it happened. $34,000 in bets. At the time of the bets, the market, the Polymarket, had the probability of intervention in January at only 6%. This person put their money on the dark horse candidate, raked it in. Wall Street Journal said more than $56 million had been placed on Maduro's ouster, with $11 million betting that he'd be gone by January the 31st. Another $40 million in losing bets had been placed on him leaving in November or in December. This ex-user claims that had made $80,000 by translating a surge in Pentagon area pizza traffic into imminent military action. Person writes on X as Sweet Cheeks, says, how I made $80,000 in a single night using Polymarket. Basically, ever since the U.S. brought their largest aircraft carrier, I knew a strike was 100% going to happen. But I didn't know when. So I built a vibe-coded bot to track the Domino's pizza orders around the Pentagon, because I knew they'd be ordering out as they are working on this stuff. So regardless of who owns all those accounts, Democrat New York Representative Richie Torres is planning to target officials potential to profit from access to government secrets. Torres will introduce the Public Integrity and Financial Prediction Markets Act of 2026. That doesn't spell anything, actually. That'd be PIF PMA, I guess. But here's how a source describes it. It prohibits federal elected officials, political appointees, and executive branch employees from engaging in certain transactions involving prediction market contracts when they either possess material, non-public information relevant to the transaction, or could reasonably obtain such information through their official duties. So, again, outside of government, you had staffers at the Washington Post and the New York Times also could have placed this bet. Both of them had heard about this before it took place, but they refrained from publishing the news to avoid putting U.S. forces in peril. But here's the other thing that's not being taught. I think somebody mentioned this somewhere, but consider the fact that the Trump administration notified the New York Times and the Washington Post, but they didn't talk to Congress about it. Didn't even talk to them about it. Do you see a problem with that? When Congress is supposed to authorize an act of war, which this was, this is invading a sovereign nation in order to kidnap the head of state. And if we are going to give ourselves a green light to do that anywhere we determine that the government is corrupt, there's no ending with this. Every government is corrupt to some degree or the other. Responding to news of Torres's upcoming bill, Polymarket rival Kalshi said its rules currently prohibit trading by anyone with inside or outside of government who has access to material non-public information. In other words, this predictive market, Kalshi, would prohibit somebody who works for the Washington Post and New York Times, prohibit them from getting the money if they placed a bet and they were right, because even though they're outside of government, they had insider information. So they said, of course, platform rules are one thing, federal laws are another. They note that Donald Trump Jr. has advisory roles on both of these predictive platforms, both on Polymarket and on Kalshi. So one person said, it was Barron who did it. I think if it was Barron, he would have more than $34,000 to put into it. Again, I think this was right when he said, so this is some lower level functionary that got wind of this and put the money in there.
Yeah, maybe that was just the money he found in the couch or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. He went through, found the change that fell in there. A lot of pennies, right? Trump doesn't like pennies. So somebody said, is Pete Hegseth making some beer money on the side? That was their comment about this. Seems pretty suspicious, making $400,000 in less than 24 hours. So, again, this account existed for only 1 week and quickly became the biggest yes holder in the Maduro out market. It's very suspicious. But just like you had millions and millions made on insider trading with 9/11, nobody ever answered for that. So, hey, there's a precedent for that. You know, what about when that happened? I guess that happened and it was all okay, so we don't have to worry about that. Remember all of the stuff that we had about Martha Stewart, insider trading and everything? It turned out that they didn't find her guilty of insider trading. They sent her to prison. Because as part of the process, when they started deposing her, they said she lied under oath. And so it was a perjury trap once they got her in. But she wasn't doing insider trading. But, hey, this is fine. 9/11, don't worry about that. We'll send Martha Stewart in for whatever reason. Could it have been an insider at New York or Washington newsrooms willing to make a buck? Seems like a lot of people had inside information on this. As we look at what is happening next, there is a list now of countries that Donald Trump wants to repeat this because he got away with it. And so now is it going to be Mexico? Is it going to be Colombia? Is it going to be, Iran, of course? Because his masters want him to go to Iran. That's pretty much a given. It's just the timing with that. Is it going to be Cuba? Right? Where do we go next? Is it going to be Greenland? You know, the pushing stuff out there about that. Stop and think about this. This is what is so disturbing to me about all this stuff, is that it is set in process. So a government that doesn't care about written law, it's only about what they can get away with. Now he's got a green light to do a lot of different things. U.S. spy, and you know, when I get into this, the conservatives, how it was a scandal that Wesley Clark said, you know, it's at the Pentagon. They've got a list in the Middle East of seven different countries that they want to go through. This one, this one, this one. And we started looking at it. We talked about that many times at InfoWars. Look, this is all just cold, calculated empire aggression. And yet now, empire is cheered by InfoWars and all these war things. As I said, I would have never worked for an organization that would have done that type of thing. And I didn't work for the organization that did that type of thing. And when he started cheering for martial law and rolling out the actual implementation of Dark Winter that had been practiced for 20 years in various forms, when Alex started pushing that, I wasn't going to be quiet about it. None of us should be quiet about this. Everybody should be talking about this. We can't do anything except talk about it. We don't have any control over the federal government. We need to understand that this empire is rotten to the core. And at some point, these chickens are going to come home to roost, and you better prepare for that. So in Mexico, a U.S. spy jet is circling the Mexican coast as Trump is threatening Venezuela-style military attack. Again, you want to make some money on the prediction markets? You've got, I'm sure they got on Polymarket, and the other one, Kalshi. I'm sure that they have a lot of people betting on which country our peace president is going to attack next. And as I said for the longest time, the way Trump spells peace is with an I. He wants a piece of Colombia. He wants a piece of Venezuela. He wants a piece of Mexico, a piece of Greenland. That's what he wants. The U.S. Navy plane spotted circling near part of Mexico's coast after Trump threatened military action against the country. The P-8 Poseidon is detected on flight tracking websites conducting surveillance and reconnaissance missions off Tijuana, south of California. The P-8 has been used to monitor suspicious ships and movements in the ocean, as it's equipped with sensors that can detect targets on the surface and underwater. And so the question is, what are they going to do with that? Trump has suggested military action similar to that in Venezuela could be possible if the Mexican government does not stamp out drug cartels. He said, would I launch strikes in Mexico to stop drugs? It's okay with me. Whatever we have to do to stop drugs. I didn't say I'm doing it, but I'd be proud to do it because we're going to save millions of lives by doing it. We've used force to try to stop drugs for 54, going on 55 years now, with Richard Nixon declaring a war on drugs using the schedule from the United Nations. And this United Nations agenda has only fed the addiction of people in power for more power. It's fed their addiction to escape the rule of law. It hasn't helped any single individual, none of this. As I said many times, you have people frequently dying from overdose inside of prisons. So if you can't stop by force and by interdiction, if you can't stop drugs in a prison, what kind of a society are we going to have to live in for trying to address the drug problem by force and by law enforcement? It'd have to be worse than the prisons that we have. So the CIA and Palace insiders, how the surprise raid on Maduro went down, as everybody's talking about. And again, all of the MAGA people who are cheering this are cheering the deep state. They're cheering the biggest drug cartel in the world, the CIA. So at the very moment the Venezuelan leader was on the phone with Trump, a CIA team was already in country monitoring his every move, closely watching where he stayed, what he ate, how he moved. Likely, the CIA would have been developing local assets over a period of years. An asset would be anyone from local citizens or military officers or even high-ranking colonels and generals in the National Army. One thing is clear at this point. The Pentagon had insider help within the socialist regime. You know, they maybe they were also engaged in Epstein-like shenanigans as well, because they have done that over and over again. They deal drugs. They overthrow countries. Coups, assassinations, kidnappings, pedophile sex rings so they can blackmail people. I despise the CIA. Why is this being cheered now? Oh, look, it worked. This is not a movie, folks. Well, actually it is. But don't get caught up in that. The Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, Don Raisin Kane, said Saturday that U.S. intelligence even knew the names of his pets. Well, do they kill or kidnap his pets as well? Those pets are probably trying to get some cocaine or machine guns, right? Got to get those pets. Elite forces had trained for months, which even involved rehearsals. You know, and bottom line, yeah, they do train on these things. We had elites and political leaders train for 20 years to pull off the pandemic nonsense. Yeah. Is that somehow a good thing? If you're training, it ought to be, you know, how this is going to be used, not simply that you're very skilled at something, right? Troops practice utilizing massive blowtorches in the event that they would have to breach the steel barriers protecting his safe room. Just how few in the U.S. administration knew about it is really the theme of new reporting. The operation was very secretive, strictly held to only the highest officials. Even Pentagon officials were unaware of the exact timing until Friday night. And, of course, nobody in Congress. We don't want to tell them. We don't want to make the case for why we need to do a war. Not going to do that. It's all going to be secret.
If it really is as secret as they're making it out to be, whoever it was on Polymarket is going to be found. You know, mm-hmm. if it's a small list of people, they're going to be looking at who it is like,
They don't care. I mean, $400,000 is like a penny to them, you know. They're not going to even look.
Chump change.
Yep. Those more directly involved in the planning will also reportedly play roles in governing Venezuela. People like Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, and Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller is out there really pushing hard to go to Greenland next. Confusion as sporadic gunfire erupts near Venezuela's presidential palace soon after Rodriguez is sworn in. Again, who knows what is really happening there. It doesn't appear to be anything from the outside. It's either internecine fighting or it is people have become very spooked and trigger happy. Thomas Massie called out Trump's Venezuela oil grab. He said the Trump administration's attempt to take over Venezuela's oil industry, he says it's not American oil, it's Venezuelan oil. Trump had said it was America's oil. Massie said oil companies entered into risky deals to develop oil, and the deals were canceled by a prior Venezuelan government. What's happening? The lives of U.S. soldiers are being risked to make those oil companies, not Americans, more profitable. He noted that one person who stands to gain from this intervention is Paul Singer, a billionaire and GOP mega donor known for being extremely pro-Israel. Singer has funded a super PAC seeking to oust Massie, who's been under fire from pro-Israel Republicans for his opposition to U.S. aid to Israel. Thomas Massie opposes aid to everyone. Again, if you do that like Pat Buchanan, you'll have the Israeli lobby come after you, call you anti-Semitic, because you don't want foreign aid going to foreign countries. According to Grok, Massie said, Paul Singer, a globalist Republican megadonor who's already spent $1 million to defeat me in the next election, stands to make billions of dollars on his distressed Citgo investment now that this administration has taken over Venezuela. A U.S. judge recently approved the sale of Citgo, the U.S.-based oil refinery that is owned by a subsidiary of Venezuela's state oil company. The judge approved the sale of it to Elliott Management. That's a firm founded by Singer. Since 2019, the U.S. has frozen all of that company's assets in the U.S., cutting off the Venezuelan government from Citgo. Installing a U.S.-friendly government in Caracas would be extremely beneficial for Amber Energy, which is the Elliott Management affiliate that is purchasing Citgo for about $6 billion. As things stand now, the Trump administration remains a long way from that goal as Maduro's vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, is now serving as the acting president. According to a report from Politico, the Trump administration has asked private U.S. oil firms that seek assets from Venezuela to be prepared to go back into the country and invest heavily. They're saying, you got to go in if you want to play and get reimbursed, said an oil executive. The offer has been on the table for 10 days, signaling oil companies may have been aware of Trump's plans to kidnap Maduro. So now it expands. It could be somebody at one of the oil companies. Some lower level, mid-level or lower level manager to invest $34,000. It's not going to be the executives. They would have put in millions. So something Massie suggested in response to Trump, saying that the U.S. oil firms will go to Venezuela and spend billions of dollars. Massie said, it seems obvious from this video that the administration worked with big U.S. oil companies before the attack to line up billions of dollars in capital for developing Venezuela's oil reserves, yet they couldn't be bothered to consult Congress. Yeah, he's the one who said that, made that point. Isn't that interesting? It's very much like when lying Leon Panetta, who was a congressman, then became head of the CIA, then became head of the Department of Defense. Remember that interchange between him and Jeff Sessions? Jeff Sessions said, you're talking about going into Syria. You're going to talk to us and get permission from Congress, right? You're a former congressman. You know how the Constitution is. You're supposed to ask us. And he goes, well, Senator, I'll talk to our allies in NATO and the UN, and we'll let you know what we decide. Well, that's not how that works. You know that's not how that works. You got to tell us first. And he just repeated it, you know, real smarmy. Lion Leon Panetta. And this is the way this is as well. You know, we'll tell the Washington Post, the New York Times, we'll talk to the oil companies, make sure they get prepared. We've got 20 or so vulture capitalists that are ready to go down there and start pouring money in. And Trump wants this poured in really quickly. He wants to see big results right away. So he's got these guys, you put that money in there, we'll pay you, right? This is the backroom deal that's being made. And as we pointed out before, this is all about the oil companies. They are the ones who are going to make all the money, and they're proud of this. You got Congresswoman Salazar saying so.
Americans who do not understand why we need to go in for three, basically for three reasons. You're in Fox business. Venezuela, for the American oil companies, will be a field day because it will be more than $1 trillion in economic activity. American companies can go in and fix all the oil pipe, the whole oil rigs, and everything that has to do with the Venezuelan petroleum companies, or anything that has to do with oil and the derivatives.
So it's not even her. Trump has said this over and over again. As a matter of fact, the headline from Freethought Project: Trump admits that he wants to take Venezuela's oil and give it to U.S. corporations. It's not going to go to Americans. All this nonsense out there. Look, the U.S. GDP just went up by $17 trillion. What nonsense. What utter nonsense. I know we're going to go further into debt for the military. We're going to go further into debt, giving subsidies to these corporations to make Trump look good. That's what's really going to happen with all this stuff. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get away from Venezuela a bit. No, we're not. I want to talk a little bit about where we go next. So I guess we are getting away from Venezuela. But I do have some news that is coming up about things like credit card interest rates and things like that I think are important. These are the issues that affect Americans. I know they're on a back burner as far as the Trump administration is concerned, as far as anybody in Washington is concerned. But these are the bread and butter issues that affect us as these guys are involved and their schemes of international criminality. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Hang on a second. Let's see. Let's do this one here.
David Knight Show.
Well, Nad Lunder says, Trump says we're in the oil business. But the reality is that we're in the drug business and have been for a very long time. The war on drugs is the best thing that ever happened to the American government and those in power who want to escape the rule of law. I wrote an op-ed piece about that yesterday, put it on Substack. So what is next? Here are the candidates here. Cuba, Colombia, Mexico, Greenland, Iran. Gentlemen, place your bets on Polymarket. You too can make $400,000 overnight, right, if you get it right. Of course, you don't have any inside information. And it could be any of these places, right? This is how crazy it's become. He wants a piece of all of these countries. So Russia denounced the lawless U.S. abduction of Maduro, U.N. Security Council, talking about the bigger picture, Moscow's condemned U.S. aggression, lamented the ideological hostility that has triumphed over businesslike pragmatism. Again, where is the principle now to oppose anything that Russia did with Ukraine? Russia's got a better reason for invading Ukraine than the U.S. does for Venezuela. And even China has a better reason for invading Taiwan than the U.S. had for invading Venezuela. But it turns out that Russia floated a Venezuela for Ukraine deal to Trump, said an ex-advisor. And this was back in 2019. Trump's former advisor, Fiona Hill, had said that Russia floated the idea of a deal to swap Venezuela for Ukraine via informal communications. This is something she testified to Congress in 6 years ago. So she said that they would step away. If the U.S. would step away from Ukraine, Russia would look the other way if we take Venezuela. Who said there's no honor among thieves? Come on. We just disproved that old axiom there. So she said the Kremlin had conveyed the offer informally and suggested that it may have been linked to the Burisma scandal, a case that led to Trump's impeachment over efforts to pressure Ukrainian officials to announce investigations involving Hunter Biden. Again, everybody knew that Hunter Biden and Burisma, we knew that was corruption coming from the Biden administration, but you know, Trump is doing the same type of stuff with his children as well. So Moscow via RT is also saying U.S. banditry in Venezuela is the harbinger of chaos. So it's going to throw the world back into an era of chaos and injustice, said the Russian ambassador to the U.N. The country that, as most of the world is looking, I don't see it that way in terms of the Ukraine war. Most of the country is saying, most of the world's countries are saying, look at this, Russia is went into Ukraine and they're going to go everywhere with this. I don't think that they are a threat to even the former Soviet satellite countries. But certainly Trump is a threat to all of the Latin American countries. Trump said on Sunday that Washington seeks to run the Latin American nation so we can take advantage of the economics of what they have. That's a quote from Trump. And so the Russian ambassador to the UN, Nebenzia, condemned U.S. actions as international banditry. So the U.S. is open pursuit of hegemony and ambitions in Latin America. Its desire to gain unlimited control over natural resources only contribute to a resurgence of neocolonialism and imperialism, he said. Well, we are the empire now, right? Need to replace Hail to the Chief with the theme from The Empire Strikes Back. Russia, along with many other BRICS nations, had already strongly condemned the U.S. actions. Moscow called for Maduro's immediate release and expressed solidarity with the people of Venezuela. Again, this is going to be more impetus for the BRICS countries and others to move away from the American dollar. That's an immediate consequence for us. Creating enemies by humiliating rivals. That's another RT analysis. One person said, when you humiliate a sovereign head of state live on TV, you create conditions for the population to resist you. When you drag a sovereign leader through New York in an open van, you only create enemies. And that's what the U.S. is doing. And I think he's right. He says, you don't break people's will, you harden it. That is what civilian bombing campaigns have always done. It hardened the will of the British people for the Germans to do the bombing of London and things like that, and vice versa. And when you do these types of actions, it rallies the troops. This is what Trump apparently doesn't understand. Even as people are revolting in Iran against the Ayatollah's regimes and against the economic conditions that are there, he wants to jump in the middle of it and say, we're locked and loaded and we're ready to come to your aid and we're going to attack. All that does is help the regime, the idea of an outside threat. It's amazing that he would be blind to that, that his advisors would be blind to that. And so what is next on Trump's march? Is it going to be Greenland, Cuba, Colombia? You know, when we look at President Trump, the guy really is nothing other than a clownish pirate. Which country will we go to next? There's his clownish Jolly Rogers right there. So the three countries that Trump is most likely to invade next, says the Express out of the UK, Greenland, Cuba, or Colombia. Of course, they're ignoring Iran as well. Trump spurs speculation, however, about his plans for Greenland. Put that in the mix as well. Cuba and Colombia, that's AP here in the U.S. And so, again, the Marco terrorists, led by Marco Rubio. Because, again, what is terrorism? It's achieving social and political goals by threats of violence or acts of violence, right? That is what our foreign policy has become, terrorism. It's a strategic, very right now. Greenland is covered with Russian and Chinese ships all over the place, they said. Well, you know, when we look at, I guess I can run this now. I was running this a lot. Didn't run it for a while there because of Charlie Kirk's murder, but we've seen this. Well, it's not working. How about that? My Greenland thing. We walk around on this plot of ground, as Mother Nature's sieve. It's a horrible place to visit and a miserable place to live, but we got to be there. We need Greenland from the standpoint of national security, said Trump. This is as absurd as fentanyl coming from Canada, folks. We had a, and still do, have a military base there. At one point in time, after World War II, because we're concerned about, we wanted advance warning from missiles coming from Russia, they built that military base up to 10,000 people. It's now down to just a couple hundred because it's obsolete. You don't need an early warning base in Greenland to warn you about missiles. We have satellites now. And so it doesn't serve any function from a defense standpoint. If it did serve a function from a defense standpoint, there's absolutely no reason why they couldn't go from a couple hundred people there to back to 10,000 there. It is a country that is amenable to that. Greenland is amenable to it. Denmark is amenable to that. And yet what they're not amenable to are the constant threats and chatter from Trump, people like Stephen Miller and Stephen Miller's wife, who puts out a meme showing the country of Greenland covered with red, white, and blue, as an American flag, and saying, soon. That really set off, that along with Trump's comments, really set off Denmark, as well as Sweden, and many others in Europe. So Trump has no right to annex the territory of Greenland, said Danish Prime Minister. She reminded Trump that Denmark already provides the U.S., a fellow NATO member, broad access to Greenland through existing security agreements. Well, you say you need this for security? You can build up your base there. You got a base there now. And you can put as many people there as you wish. Not an issue. She said, I would therefore strongly urge the U.S. to stop threatening an historically close ally. Yeah, maybe you do that with Canada as well. Maybe you stop threatening Canada as well. You've sunk an entire industry, probably more than one, by creating a backlash and consumer boycotts in Canada. So Denmark on Sunday also signed on to a European Union statement underscoring that the right of the Venezuelan people to determine their future must be respected, as Trump has vowed to run Venezuela. Trump on Sunday mocked Denmark's efforts at boosting Greenland's national security posture, saying the Danes have added one more dog sled to the Arctic's territory arsenal. Well, again, he's free to add as many dog sleds or missiles or troops as he wishes. They've made that clear. Greenlanders and Danes were further rankled by social media posts following the raid by a former Trump administration official, Katie Miller, married to Stephen Miller. So again, as that's happening, you got Marco Rubio issuing stern warnings to Cuba, and of course Lindsey Graham, and then there's also Iran. They all want to go. It's so many choices, so many places to go to war with. How do we determine? You know, maybe they'll throw some darts at the board or something. I personally think that it's going to be more about personal vendettas and ego than anything else. So I suspect that because this guy in Colombia pushed back, the president of Colombia pushed back and hard against Trump on social media and insulted him, I would make that the first candidate. But Marco Rubio wants Cuba first. And so it's a personal thing for Marco Rubio. You know, Colombia has become a personal thing for Trump. So I think somebody, and then of course, Iran can happen simultaneously. Because that's Trump's masters. They bought Trump. They own him. He's going to do whatever they say when they say it. And so that's the only wild card that is there, whether or not they believe that they can do both of these things at the same time. And I think they think that they can. The Cuban government said in a statement read on state television on Sunday that 32 officers were killed in the U.S. military operation. So this is part of what the crowd is saying. They said, well, you know, we don't like Venezuela because they're allied with people that we don't like. They've got the Cubans running security for Maduro, and you've got Maduro providing a place for Hamas and for Hezbollah to train, they allege. And so for all these reasons, we have the people that we obey tell us that we have to go after them. And this kind of pragmatism is what gets us there. Also, the warning delivered to Colombia. And the U.S. in September added Colombia to a list of nations that failed to cooperate in the drug war for the first time in almost 30 years. Is this something new that cocaine is coming from Colombia? It's nothing new at all. It's been happening for 30 years. And what have we been doing for 30 years? We didn't have them on the list of countries to watch in the drug war. Instead, we were giving them money. And it's only after the Colombian president criticized Trump for what he was doing in Venezuela. Trump said, all right, that's it. No more money for you. Then they continue to fight. And so Trump is saying things like, well, Operation Colombia looks really good to me. But Marco Rubio, the Marco terrorists, are focusing on Cuba. That's where his parents came from, and he's got an axe to grind with Cuba. He didn't rule out the Cuban communist government would become the Trump administration's next target when he was being interviewed by Kristen Welker over the weekend. She said, is the Cuban government the Trump administration's next target? He says, well, the Cuban government is a huge problem. Yeah. She said, is that a yes? And he said, I think they're in a lot of trouble. Yes, he said. If I lived in Havana and I was in the government, I would be concerned at least a little bit, said Marco Rubio. And then we had on the airplane, Lindsey Graham. Take a look at this clip. Lindsey Graham is like some kind of cartoon sidekick, an evil cartoon sidekick. You know, you got the main villain, and then you got the little guy who's hunched over on the side. You know, like Grimer Wormtongue or something like that. And so this is was on the plane. This is from Trump and Lindsey.
You know, one of the things that is happening, and I think you see it all the time, Howard, you've seen it, that Cuba is ready to fall. You know?
Yes.
Cuba looks like it's ready to fall. I don't know if they can hold out. But Cuba now has no income. They got all of their income from Venezuela, from the Venezuelan oil. They're not getting any of it. And Cuba literally is ready to fall. And you have a lot of great
look at Graham. Americans
that are very happy about this.
Marco Rubio.
Never saw a war they didn't like. Never went to a war himself, right? The murder of people, which always happens in war, there's always going to be innocent people killed in war. That gets him excited and thrilled. It's absolutely amazing to watch him. And here's another. This continued on for a while.
Have done it. And as to this commander-in-chief, he did something people talked about doing. You just wait for Cuba. Cuba is a communist dictatorship that's killed priests and nuns. They've preyed on their own people. Their days are numbered. We're going to wake up one day, I hope in 26, in our backyard, we're going to have allies in these countries doing business with America, not narco-terrorist dictators killing Americans. This is a big frigging day. And everybody in the world is thinking differently than they were just a few days ago because of what you did.
Oh, yeah, suck up to him, you know. It almost went off the trails, though, when he tried to suck up to him too much. When he first got elected in January, we met, you know, biggest comeback ever. And we talked about, and then Trump cuts him off. Trump says, well, you think so, really? I didn't feel it was a comeback, actually, because, you know, the first one was, and he starts to go into the thing, the first one, they stole the election from me, right? And then Graham cuts him off and says, well, the bottom line is we talked about a drug caliphate in our backyard. We had Venezuela, we had Cuba, we had Colombia in our backyard. And these three countries had been condemned ever since I've been in politics. Joe Biden, he said, put a $25 billion bounty on Maduro's head. And as I pointed out, that is what he's talking about, is a $25 million. Lindsey Graham doesn't know and doesn't care about the difference between a million and a billion, or I would say for that matter, a trillion. None of these things matter to him. He's been in Washington so long, it doesn't care if it's an M, a B, or a T after the number. And again, he misstated that. And He said, but you just wait for Cuba. Cuba is a communist dictatorship that's killed priests and nuns. They preyed on their own people. You know, Trump's bioweapon killed priests and nuns. It killed people of every walk of life. He had martial law with that. He preyed on his own people so that corporations could make billions of dollars and so that he could push this political agenda to track, to surveil, and to control and enslave us. Now, how is he any better than Cuba? Graham, one of the most hawkish Republicans in the Senate, also went on Fox News over the weekend, and he put on a Make Iran Great Again hat. Yeah, they've always been about Iran. And, of course, we know what Bibi's been saying for 30-plus years about Iran.
If not stopped, Iran could produce a nuclear weapon in a very short time. It could be a year. It could be within a few months.
They have the
wherewithal
stored up preserved knowledge to make a bomb very quickly if they wanted to do it.
Iran is
2015
weeks away from having the fissile material for an entire arsenal of nuclear bombs.
They're very close. They're 6 months away from being about 90% of having the enriched uranium for an atom
2012.
Bomb. It's gearing up to have
2006
25 bombs, atomic bombs a year, 250 bombs in a decade.
Ladies and gentlemen,
1996
is running out.
Iran will be capable
1995
alone, without importing anything, nuclear bombs within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, we keep hearing these same lies over and over again. You know, just like I played the clip for you, John Stewart saying, you know, whether it's Iraq or whether it's Venezuela, they didn't even bother to change the sound bites.
Iraq, Venezuela, go!
We're giving them full opportunity to do it the easy way. And when it doesn't work, we'll do it the hard way.
If we can do things the easy way, that's fine. And we have to do it the hard way, that's fine, too.
Chemical weapons is a threat to the United States.
Fentanyl poses a chemical weapons threat to the United States.
Al-Qaeda terrorists inside Iraq.
Al-Qaeda of our hemisphere.
If we can get rid of Saddam, it could really begin to transform the region.
There's an opportunity to transform the entire region.
Bringing freedom and democracy.
Democracy and freedom
can serve as a
beacon of hope.
Shock and awe.
Yeah, we just keep getting the same recycled lies. When will we ever wake up? Right? They just keep telling us the same lies. Yeah, it could be weeks or at least a couple of months, and they're going to have dozens of these nuclear bombs in Iran. And then, of course, you know, shock and awe, weapons of mass destruction. They just keep repurposing this stuff and spinning it. Well, Iran is a country of over 90 million people. It has a large military that is overseen by a group of military people that have a long military-tested experience going back to the 1980s, the Iran-Iraq War. It has one of the world's premier arsenals of mid- and long-range ballistic missiles. It even possesses hypersonic capabilities, which the Israelis learned about in that 12-day war. Because of this, last June, Israeli warplanes were careful to operate largely outside of Iranian airspace. Even though many anti-air missile sites were allegedly destroyed, the threat remains strong. If you look at Venezuela, if there's any resistance there, if there is a guerrilla war, if there's attacks against these the infrastructure that is there, and if you look at that, it's a jungle environment, very much like Vietnam. So why are we getting into these types of situations? As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting to see the propaganda. You had people in New York who are both pro and anti-Maduro that were protesting. But in the immediate aftermath of this, you had a lot of news organizations, especially the Trump-supporting news organizations, showing people that, look at this, they're crying tears of joy that Maduro's out. Turns out that was AI slop. Pretty clearly seen. And people are putting that out on social media. A lot of people are saying, oh, look at this. You know, they're crying. That was just generated by AI. But we also saw a classic tactics. There was one woman who was out there cheering Maduro, and I'm sorry, protesting Maduro, the other side. And they tried to make it look like there was a large crowd of people that were protesting. And when you actually look at the pictures, you can see what they have done in terms of positioning the camera so that you don't see just how big the crowd is. They can make the crowd look larger. I know. I've been in this business for a while. I know how that works. And if you look closer, you see most of the people that are there, standing there, are holding their phones up, taking pictures of this woman who is doing pretty much a single-person protest. There's a lot of issues with this. And this reminds me very much, as I look at this part of it, I hope it doesn't work out this way. Honestly, I do hope it doesn't work out this way. But remember when George W. Bush did his mission accomplished speech on the aircraft carrier? Was it accomplished? What happened over a long period of time? And again, to say that, well, we're not going to do nation rebuilding, that's exactly what they're doing. They're going to try to rebuild oil refineries, some of the things that are most vulnerable to small drone attacks. And so I would certainly expect to see that type of thing. But when it comes to Iran, Naftali Bennett tweets out, "It's time." Another Israeli direct threat aimed at Iran. And so when we look at these different ones, you know, is it for defense in Greenland? Is it for fentanyl in Venezuela? Is it for an insult in Colombia? Is it for Israel in Iran? We'll see what happens. But we're getting to the point where the U.S. Does not have the kind of immunity that they imagine that they do. But I want to leave this now because we spent so much time on it. I want to spend the whole show on this. I've got some other things that are very important I want to talk about. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about what is happening with pharmaceuticals. We're going to talk a little bit about Scott Adams and some of the things as Christians that we need to be looking for this next year. And so we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Defending the American dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels anywhere, from country to blues, classic hits to news. APS radio curates incredibly diverse playlists for you to enjoy. Get details at APSradio.com.
Let's talk a little bit about what's happening with vaccines and pharmaceutical business, as well as HHS and CMS and others. Now, the Washington Post is talking about how trust in vaccines is gone. They're pulling out everything they can to try to scare people back into this. So, you know, they constantly are going back to South Carolina and saying, look, you know, there's a huge epidemic of measles in South Carolina. Guess what? Nobody died. Go back and look at the rate of autism in a few years. Maybe it's going down in South Carolina. But the Washington Post comes out, offers a lot of different reasons. They say distrust of authorities, political polarization, misinformation, backlash against mandates. All of this is detached from responsibility, says Brownstone. The article describes the consequences of distrust without ever talking about why people distrust them. It's an unwillingness by the media, by public health officials, by these people to address what really happened with the Trump shots. As a matter of fact, this article, they don't even want to go there in terms of criticizing Trump and his involvement and all of that, or to talk about how people booed Trump when he introduced Albert Bourla, and yet they still support Trump. That's the amazing thing. And with all this happening, even RFK Jr. is reluctant to confront the COVID vaccines. He knows that Trump likes them and wants to take credit for them. So he's not going to confront them and stop them either, even though he knows fully well that they are killing and crippling people in massive numbers. The good news is, however, that CMS, and again, this is under HHS, under RFK Jr., but CMS is directly under Dr. Oz, which is not a big fan of the things that Dr. Oz has done in the past. But doctors will no longer be receiving financial rewards for vaccinating kids. CMS has been bribed. Let's put it more plainly. They're not rewards, they're bribes, okay? And this is what I tried to explain to the people who were trying to cover for Trump back in 2020. He's not doing it. It's the bad governors that are doing it. And, of course, it was also the hospitals that were killing people. But they were not coming to that understanding yet. They didn't realize how the ventilators were killing people, even though we reported it. The hospitals are being bribed. The governors are being bribed with cash from Trump. And it was CMS who was bribing the hospitals, saying, if you point the finger at somebody, you don't even have to have a test initially. You do a clinical diagnosis, you point and say, this person's got a respiratory illness. Is it cold? Is it flu? No, it's COVID. Well, if you do that and you say it's COVID, without even having the PCR baloney done, and it is baloney, we will give you a cash bonus, right? And what was it? I think it was $13,000. And if you put them on a ventilator, you get another $39,000. And then anything, well, you get a $13,000 bonus, and then anything that you do to anybody, if they've got COVID, we will give you a 20% bonus, a reward, for saying that somebody's got COVID, whether they do or not. And this whole thing blew up when the American Hospital Association in August of 2020 said to CMS, wait a minute, you told us that you didn't have any tests for COVID. You told us that they didn't work anyway. You didn't have enough of them, and they didn't work anyway. So you told us just to do a clinical diagnosis, and now you're going to require us to have evidence that we ran a test that you said you didn't have enough of, that you said didn't work. You're going to require that test result in order to pay us the bonus reward that you promised. That's why I say there's no honor among thieves, right? So the truth did come out. The American Hospital Association, AHS, AHA, an aha moment. Well, they've been doing the same thing with childhood vaccines. And so CMS has been involved in bribing people for this as well. So they said they're not going to have payment to performance. They're going to tie payment to performance on immunization quality measures in Medicaid and Childhood Health Insurance Program, CHIP, at the federal level. So they're going to back off on that. The problem is there's another aspect of this. When you look at how bloodthirsty, greedy the medical establishment was to vaccinate children with 72 shots, it truly is astounding. Not only were they getting bonuses from CMS, again, the same type of thing they did through COVID, but they were also getting penalized by the insurance companies if they didn't do it. And we've talked about that as well, that if you didn't get a certain percentage of your pediatric patients up to, caught up on their vaccine schedule, if you didn't get, you know, let's say 80% of them or whatever, they would cut your insurance payments to the extent that as Travis and his wife had to search for a pediatrician that would not push the vaccines on them and would see them if they didn't get vaccinated. Because if you take somebody in as a patient and they're not going to do the vaccines, that could basically bankrupt your practice because insurance isn't going to pay for anything that you do. And so the pediatrician that they had to go to, they have to pay because of this financial issue. They have to pay to basically be a member of a club there in order to do that. Isn't that the way that works, Travis?
Yes, yeah. To make up for the fact that they're not making the money from the vaccination quota.
And that they're getting punished by the insurance mm-hmm. industry, cutting all of their payments for anything that they file. So CMS has been bribing people to vaccinate children on schedule with 72 vaccines. The insurance companies have been shutting down practices financially by penalizing them. So carrots and sticks all over the place. And so good to see that happening. And at the same time, RFK Jr. is cutting down the number of recommended vaccines for kids. He said the vaccine schedule is not a mandate, said Senator Cassidy, who is a pro-vaccine guy. It's a recommendation giving parents the power. Is he lying to your face? Well, yes, he is. How do you say that it's not a mandate? They may not mandate it on the parent side, but you won't be able to get a pediatrician to see your child if you don't get the shots. Again, because why? The insurance industry will put them out of business and they won't get the bonuses from CMS. So hopefully this kind of structural issue is changing. We can hope that it's going to change. It looks like it's starting to move in that direction. And when we look at other news, you've got, wait a second, this is the wrong one here. Here it is. This headline got my attention. This is from Newsmax. Again, they're going to be pushing Trump. Trump's credit card cap could give consumers $100 billion in savings. I looked at it and I thought, credit card cap? This is the first I've seen of that. Is he getting ready to do something with that? Because this is something that I have talked about for the longest time. I said, if I ever ran for office again, state or federal, I would make that the key issue that I'd run for. I think that more than anything speaks to people about the greed and the corruption of the system that is there. That'd be great news if that's true, to go back to restoring the usury laws, a cap of 10% on credit cards. Because right now, the average interest rate on credit card accounts is 22.8%. And this is when the banks are getting the money from the Federal Reserve. This is the Federal Reserve's own thing. The Federal Reserve says, yeah, the banks pay us 4%, and then they charge you 22.8%. During his 2024 presidential campaign, candidate Trump announced that he would cap credit card rates at 10%. But here's a news flash for Newsmax. President Trump's not talking about this. He's talking about spending money and putting it on the national credit card to have more wars. That's what he's talking about. Most states ban such excessive interest rates charged to consumers under so-called usury laws. Again, it's just something that can be done at the state level. The usury laws were removed at the federal level, when we had massive inflation at the end of the 1970s. And as I've said before, when Karen and I got our first home, we paid 13% fixed interest rate on the home loan mortgage. We were young and stupid. And But when you look at the fact that for years they've been charging people 20, 30, 40% or more on credit card rates, and for the longest time they weren't even paying 4%. They were getting it at a 0% rate after the 2008 issues that were there. A small number of states, however, like Delaware, have made a racket out of giving banks domiciled there almost free rein to charge consumers as much as they want. So that apparently is how they're able to get through this as a loophole. The banks can still make enormous profits if they get it for 4% and charge people 20-something percent. And it's kind of interesting that you have a couple of bills. This is not coming from Trump. This is coming from people in Congress on the Senate side. The people who have picked it up and run with it are Josh Hawley, Republican, and Bernie Sanders, to cap interest rates at 10% for 5 years. Why 5 years? Well, everybody knows inflation is going to come roaring back, and you're going to have a situation just like you did in the late 1970s, framing it as immediate relief for working Americans. On the House side, you have Republican Anna Paulina Luna joining Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC. So you've got the two of the most leftist people of the Democrats, AOC and Bernie Sanders, pick this up. And fortunately, you got a couple of Republicans doing it. But the issue is, why are Republicans, for the most part, abandoning this and letting the Democrats pick up the torch and say, we're going to defend people against the exploitation of the banks? This is clearly exploitation. We should be against it when it happens from corporations or banks, just like we should be against it when the government does evil things. But again, that is part of the bipartisan divide, has been for a long time. Luna said, for too long, credit card companies have abused working class Americans with absurd interest rates, trapping them in an almost insurmountable amount of debt. This was always a hallmark of organized crime. Loan sharking is what they called it. And it was something that only the mafia did. Now the banks have become the mafia. And so, as a matter of fact, the Bank Policy Institute, which represents the big banks, argued that such a cap would reduce access to credit for the very consumers most likely to revolve their balances. In other words, you know, we got a lot of poor people out there. They need to have access to credit. And so to give them access to credit, we're going to charge them 20, 30, 40, 50%. That's going to help them? I mean, what kind of perverted logic is that? You know, I remember The Godfather, the clip that I played about drugs being a dirty business. I played that when Trump was selling the vaccine stuff. And in it, you got the Godfather, Marlon Brando, and the meeting of all the different mafia families. He goes, yeah, we got gambling, we got loans, we got prostitution. Not doing drugs. Drugs is a dirty business, right? But yeah, we have these other things, prostitution, gambling, and loan sharking. We got all those things. Those are fine. And those have all been embraced now by the politicians and the banks. They have absolutely embraced that. Well, I'm going to jump over here since we just got a couple of minutes left. And I want to say real quickly, when you look at Scott Adams battling terminal cancer, this has been picked up by a lot of different organizations. And he said, you know, I've had a lot of people talking to me about becoming a Christian. He said, I don't want to argue with people about that. He says, I promise you I will convert, but I probably won't spend much time in that phase. So don't expect it to happen today, okay? So he's looking and said, yeah, I guess I need to do something about that. I've been given, you know, everything that he says, I don't think there's going to be any recovering from any of this. I'll give you an update if any of that stuff happens, but I don't think I'm going to recover. And yet still, hang off a second, because I want to talk a little bit about this before we do that. He still is kicking this can down the road. And I got to say, make sure that you're not someone like that. You know, tomorrow is not promised to any of us. And we need to understand what our relationship is with God. You know, he's focused on everything except that. And so many of us are. He said, yeah, probably this summer, when he found out about it in May last year, he said, yeah, probably this summer I'll be checking it out. He still hasn't checked it out. As a matter of fact, he says, I'm not an atheist. They operate from certainty. So he says, yeah, I don't really know. You know, a lot of people boast about the fact that they are agnostic. And what does that mean? That's a Greek word, you know, gnosis, you know, just like diagnosis or whatever. That means that you know something. When you put an A in front of it, that means you don't know, right? So agnostic is Greek, and if you were to say it in Latin, it would be ignoramus. People don't like to boast about being an ignoramus, but they boast about being agnostic as if that is some kind of a virtue. He says he's not been a believer. He said, I usually just let that set there when Christians talk to me about Christianity. He said, because that's not an argument that I want to have. Well, it's not an argument. It's a simple declaration. And that's really what evangelicalism means. You know, we're not there to debate people. We're just there to make a declaration. You can accept it or you can reject it. But you need to think about it. It's not a club that you're joining. It's not like you're changing your voter registration from agnostic to Christian or something like that. It is something that is far deeper and fundamental. And it's not something that he would do in order to impress and to make amends with other people, other Christians, with, you know, to join their club. This is about his relationship with God, who he's about to meet, and at which point it will be too late for him to do anything else. He says, I also have respect for any Christian who goes out of their way to try to convert me, because how would I believe your own religion, if you're not trying to convert me? Which is what I say about people like Mike Huckabee, and his first name is John Hagee, I think, but Hagee, the guy that's in San Antonio, these Zionists who go out there and say, well, I think Paula White's in the same category. I don't want to talk to Jews about Christ. You know, they're Jews. I don't need to talk to them about that. Really? You don't believe your own faith? You don't believe that there is no way to the Father except through me, which is what Christ said? He said, I am the way. There is no other way. So then he talked about Pascal's wager. You know, he says, I still have time, but my understanding is that you're never too late. Well, yeah, there is a point at which it is too late for you. As a matter of fact, I looked at this because we just had one of my best friends from high school. His wife just died suddenly. She's been battling cancer for quite some time, but she was actually looking pretty good and doing pretty good at this moment in time. It was terminal. And they went on a trip, and she died in her sleep. And so she's doing much better, actually, than Scott Adams is doing. You never know if you've got time or not. He said, my skepticism I have about reality would certainly be instantly answered if I wake up in heaven. I do believe that the dominant Christian theory is that I would wake up in heaven if I have a good life. No, that is not Christianity at all. That's not it at all. We don't get there through our works. We don't get there through pleading our works. You know, as a matter of fact, just like Christ set up the standard, he said, you've heard you not commit adultery. He goes, but if you look at another person's wife with lust, that is adultery in your heart. Or thou shalt not kill, but if you're angry with somebody, that's murder in your heart. It's a much higher standard. And the reality is, excuse me, the reality is that our standards of what is good and our understanding of what we have done in terms of rebellion to God are so skewed that we don't really understand that. We got a lot of religions that all have a different way that we can earn our way to God. Christian religion is that God came to us. He paid the price in mercy, paid for our sins. And he says, and so to my Christian friends, he said, yes, it is coming. So you don't need to talk me into it. I am now convinced that the risk reward is completely smart. If it turns out that there's nothing there, I've lost nothing. But I've respected your wishes, and I like doing that. And if it turns out that there is something there, and the Christian model is the closest to it, then I win. This is the kind of thing where he looked at what was happening with the vaccine stuff and everything, and he said, okay, so you guys win. You made the right decision. I got the vaccine, and it wasn't the right decision, and perhaps, I don't know, perhaps that's why he has cancer now, the turbo cancer. But he said, you just lucked into that position because your bias is to resist what the government does. So you got lucky. It's like, no, we didn't. There was actually evidence for that. And there's evidence for Christ. There's evidence for God. There's evidence for the Bible. And so, again, I say this because we can all learn from this. And he still needs your prayer because that is the guy really doesn't know what's going on with that. But we just, again, I hope that you can do something with this to help other people. Dilbert has headlined another place. Dilbert, comic creator, says that he'll convert to Christianity someday. Well, it would be comical if it was not so tragic. So keep him in your prayers, and I hope that you have a nice day. Thank you for joining us. Go ahead, Travis, you can play us out. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.